ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna, welcome once again to our Wednesday program. Today we will be studying verse number 15 from chapter 8 of the Bhagavad Gita. Kindly repeat after me. Mamupetya punarjanma dukkhalayam ashashvatam नाप्नुवन्ति महात्मानः संसिद्धिं परमां गताः मामुपेत्य तु पुनर्जन्म दुःखालयम् अशाश्वतम् नाप्नुवन्ति महात्मानः संसिद्धिं परमां गताः मामुपेत्य पुनर्जन्म दुःखालयम् अशाश्वतम् नाप्नुवन्ति महात्मानः संसिद्धिं परमां गताः। Who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादे पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। So in this very important verse from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is reminding us once again about the nature of this world. And he tells us that this world is dukkhalayam. Dukkhalayam means it's an abode of miseries. Just like you have the Himalaya, Himalaya, the abode of snow, so also Lord Krishna says, this abode of misery is the material world. It is our lot to partake of this misery and to share in it. This is Lord Krishna's certificate of guarantee that whatever you may do in this material world, you are going to be subjected to miserable conditions in life. You have no choice in this matter. So it is a rather bleak prospect from which we begin our discussion today. And whenever we actually speak about Bhagavad Gita, the first thing we always inform people is that this is a miserable world. So very often we are always put off as being very pessimistic people. Oh, why are you always talking about misery? Why don't you see the positive side of things? Why don't you see the brighter side of life? But actually the whole world is always trying to make you see the brighter side of life. But also, when we come to Bhagavad Gita, we have to be reminded of the reality. What Lord Krishna is talking about is not a pessimistic viewpoint. What he is saying is the reality which we all have to face if we want to transcend it. Everyone is suffering and everyone knows it, but we simply want to ignore it. Therefore Lord Krishna says, don't ignore the reality, face it. So he says, this is a dukkhalayam ashashvatam. Ashashvatam means it's a temporary place. Everything is temporary here. We have been discussing this issue in the last couple of Wednesdays about how the so-called pleasures of this world are also very temporary. They come and they go. Adyantavanta kaunteya na teshu ramate buddhaha. And because such pleasures, they have a beginning and an end, the wise men do not delight in such pleasures. And rather they understand that such pleasures are in fact the cause of our bondage and our misery. So at every opportunity in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is reminding us that beware. Don't think this world is a very comfortable place. Don't try to settle down here too much. Don't accumulate so many possessions and don't get so attached to all of them, because very soon you will have to leave it. So rather, live a life of few possessions. Live a life of detachment, so that when the time comes to leave them and to go, you will not be disturbed. But unfortunately in this world, we hardly ever reflect very deeply or very philosophically upon the various distresses of life. Well, what are the real problems of life? The whole world, through its science and technology, is trying to give us some means of happiness, but they have not identified the root problems. In the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, he is describing the various symptoms of knowledge. He says, what is knowledge? And among the various symptoms of knowledge, he says, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. He says, one of the symptoms of knowledge is to be able to perceive the distress of birth, death, old age and disease. And this in fact are the basic miseries of life. Birth, death, old age, disease. Now birth, right from childhood, we know how it is such a suffering situation. We don't remember the time when we were in our mother's womb, but we were there. And from the Shastras we are told that the life of the child in the mother's womb is an extremely distressful one. We have discussed this perhaps some time back also. That the child is constantly subjected to so many pains within the mother's womb. Every time the mother eats something that is pungent or acidic or that is not very nice, it eats into the skin of the child. Every time there are worms in the mother's stomach, they all eat into the skin of the child. Whenever the mother moves, the child is hurt. So in this way, the child has to undergo so many sufferings. And above all, because the child is curled up in the fetal position for so many months, he feels stifled and is very dark inside. Can you imagine if all of us were confined to a very small dark space for many months together? It is not that the child is unconscious. The child becomes conscious at a certain point in time. The materialistic people, they are not aware of when consciousness begins, and therefore this big controversy about abortion. The whole US-American presidential election was based, one of the cornerstones of that was about abortion. But they don't know that life really begins right from the time of conception. The soul or the jivatma is transferred through the father's semen into the mother's womb and then it develops. So consciousness is there right from the point of conception. Only thing is that the consciousness is temporarily covered over. Just like when we are sleeping. We are actually conscious, but that consciousness is for the time being covered over. Similarly, the consciousness of the child is just covered over for a couple of months. And by the time the child is 6 or 7 months old in the mother's womb, he regains his consciousness and he prays to the Lord. He says, please release me from this hellish situation. I promise you that once I emerge from my mother's womb, I will become your devotee and I will surrender to you. But I cannot tolerate this situation any longer. But finally, when he emerges from the mother's womb, Maya overtakes him, and then he forgets his promises, and then he goes the way all the others have gone. Huh? He forgets about the reality of the situation. He forgets in what suffering situation he was. So birth is such a horrible situation, but we have forgotten. Then there is death. We have also died in the past. Vasamsi jirnani yathavyahaya navani grhanati naroparani. We saw also in the earlier sessions that this body is like a dress, and death means simply that we have to change the dress. So we have forgotten that we have changed our material dress so many times, and each time we have been subjected to so much pain. In the Garuda Purana it is said that when we die, the pain is equivalent to the pain of being bitten by as many as 40,000 scorpions. If we are bitten by just one mosquito or a fly, it is so painful, and we are always agitated. Can you imagine the pain of being bitten by 40,000 scorpions? That is the pain of death. It is said also that at that time, the phlegm, the mucus, the bile, the air, they all gather in the throat. And the bewilder one's intelligence, the eyeballs bulge, everything rattles, all the sense organs fail. We completely lose possession of all our faculties. Kantha varodhana smaran vidhau smaranam kutaste. How then will it be possible to think of the Lord at the time of death? So there is a great king called King Kulashekhara who prays prana prayana samaye kafavata pitthai kantha varodhana smaranam kutaste. He says, at the time of death, my Lord, all these things will accumulate in my throat, and it will become so painful that I will not be able to think of you at the time of death. So what is the solution? You please let me leave my body right now when I'm healthy. Of course, he doesn't resort to suicide. Sometimes people say, then let me just die painlessly, let me just swallow some tablets or follow the easy way out. But no. Unless you follow the bona fide path as laid down in the Bhagavad Gita and train yourself to think of the Lord till in your whole life, so that at the time of death you can think of him, till such time we will not be able to cheat the Lord into getting an easy way out. It's not that we live a sinful life right through and then think that at the time of death I will think of God and go back to God. That's not possible. So when we come face to face with the problem of death, the intense pain of death, we will completely lose all our intelligence. We can even see that by the time people are nearing death, they lose their faculties. They start imagining things, they see hallucinations, so many problems. So death is very painful, we are all aware of that. We have experienced it, but we have forgotten. And then there is old age. Those of us who are already old, or those of us who have experience of relatives who have been very old, we know the situation. They have to suffer so much. And especially as time goes on, no one cares for the older people. And the reality of the situation is, as the people get older, the relatives simply think now, oh, when will he pass away? Or when will she pass away? This is a fact, is it not? It's a harsh reality. And then the sons will be wondering, when will the father die so that I can inherit the property, so that I can take the money? This is the harsh reality of life. We have to come to terms with it. So in old age, everyone is suffering not only from so many bodily ailments, but also from the fact that he or she is unwanted. In America and the West, we see, because there is no culture anymore, or there was never any culture, really speaking, there anyway. So now there is no culture of the young people taking care of the parents. So by the time the child is 17 years old, he or she has left home to make his own or her own living. And the parents are left to fend for themselves. And therefore, by the time they're old, they have to go to the old age homes. No one cares for them properly there. And therefore, when they live, they have no friends, no love, nothing. Therefore, what do? They simply accumulate so many pets. They have so many 15 cats and 15 dogs. And then not only that, they inherit, they leave behind all their property to the cats and dogs. Because they don't love the children anymore. So their money, their wealth, everything is assigned in their will to their cats and dogs. This is a reality, this is going on. Why? Because old age is such a suffering situation. And again, we will all have to come to terms with it eventually. Unless, of course, we die earlier. And then there is the suffering of disease. Disease is such a suffering situation, all of us are accustomed to it. There was a hoarding I saw in Bombay the other day. For once, it was a sensible hoarding, a sensible advertising. It said that we may be living longer, but we are not living happier. It's a fact that by medical science, they say that they have increased your lifespan. They're able to cure so many diseases. But actually what's happening? With the number of diseases has simply multiplied. And what are our medical techniques doing? They're simply increasing our suffering. All this radiation therapy, chemotherapy, this therapy, that therapy, is unnecessarily simply prolonging the pain of our existence. We are not actually able to find a solution to disease per se. We may find solution to one kind of disease for some time, but sooner or later, then there is another disease that comes upon us. You see, disease is there because we are unwilling to live in harmony with the laws of nature. Because we are violating the laws of God. Therefore, we have so many diseases one after the other coming upon us. And then when we have one disease, we run to the doctor. He gives us some tablets. For some time there is some relief. But then again there is another disease and another. So if we just analyze in the last 30 or 40 years the history of medical science, you will see how for each deadly disease that has been cured temporarily, nature has some more aces up her sleeve. And another deadly disease is let loose. You had cancer, you had syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes, and now you have the most deadly disease of AIDS, which is threatening to swamp the whole world. So by the aid of our medical science, we may be able to cure one disease for some time, but we cannot cure disease per se. We cannot cure disease itself. So these are the four basic problems, the four basic sufferings that are there in this life. Birth, death, old age and disease. And a person who is able to understand these as being the fundamental problems of our existence is considered to be a wise man. Otherwise, we will simply be beating around the bush and trying to solve our problems. All our so-called scientific advancement is of no avail because it is not able to actually solve these four basic problems. It is simply just going round and round and round. So we are unable to identify the problem. And therefore, we try to solve the problem simply by some advancement of technology. And we think that because now we have so many atom bombs, and we have spaceships, and we have so many other advancements, we think now we are happy. Now we have succeeded in making our life comfortable. But this will never happen unless we tackle these four problems. And what we need is a permanent solution to that. Without that, there is no hope. So Lord Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, is giving us a permanent solution to birth, death, old age and disease. And that permanent solution is that you don't have to take birth again in this material world. This is the spiritual path. Exactly what that process is, we will be dealing with in subsequent sessions. But for now, today we should focus simply on one unpleasant fact, and that is how unpleasant this material world is. It is very important. We find so many spiritual personalities all over India. They deliver so many lectures on so many variety of subjects, and they are very eloquent speakers, and they hold the audience captivated thoroughly by their eloquence. They are so charismatic in their personality, and in this way they have lakhs of followers. But if you actually hear the lectures, hardly one of them, any one of them, will actually stress upon this one fundamental reality of our life. How unpleasant this material world is. That this material world is a dukkhalayam. You may talk about so many nice leelas, you may talk about so many nice stories from the scriptures, but unless you give the reality, unless you point out that this world is a miserable place, don't waste your time trying to become happy in this world. An intelligent person should not waste time in this way. But no, many people, I have personally had the experience, they will say, oh no, you can do this, you can smoke your cigarettes, you can have your bit of alcohol here and there, you can do this, you can do that, you can do all these things, but at the same time you just come also to the temple. A genuine spiritual personality will be uncompromising. He will not compromise in the basic principles of spiritual life. And the basic principle of spiritual life is that material life is miserable. Therefore it is said, unless one is utterly convinced that this material world is a miserable place, one cannot take to spiritual life wholeheartedly. In other words, to the extent that you still have hope in your heart that I can become happy by this way or by that way, to that extent you will not be convinced about the reality of spiritual life. To that extent you will not be able to have faith in God. And to that extent, therefore, you will not be able to succeed in your spiritual endeavor, and indeed, in life. Therefore, materialistic people, they often accuse those in the spiritual field, or you are simply escaping from the reality. You don't know because you can't face the situation. Does that sound familiar? You can't face the reality, the problems of your life, so you're taking refuge in God, simply on a sentimental platform. But let us see very analytically who is escaping and who isn't. Actually, spiritual life means to face the reality. The reality is dukkha doshanu darshanam. The four miseries are there, and we are trying to find the root solution, the solution to this root cause. Whereas materialistic people, the whole materialistic philosophy is to gloss over the materialist, the problems of life. And this has become an art that has been finally honed to perfection through the medium of technology, science, and so many other ways. To simply cover up the realities of life, the miseries of life, so that you don't see them so obviously anymore. And that is called material comfort. The materialistic people, what do they take refuge in? If you see somebody smoking very deeply, and you ask him, why are you smoking so much? He will say, tension hai. He will say, I'm intense, I'm very tense. So to get rid of the tension, he has to take refuge to the cigarette. He has to take refuge to the alcohol. Somebody has to take refuge to drugs. And on a final platform, somebody has to take refuge to some form of entertainment. Somebody will go to a movie hall. And once he goes to a movie hall, or worse still, he sits in front of the TV all day long, and he's lost in a fantasy world. In that fantasy world, he's living in a dream world where everything is nice. He is what he wants to be in life, which he couldn't be in real life. And so he identifies with all the figures on the screen. And as it is, that illusion of life is so deep, but we intensify that illusion, that dream state, by going to these illusory situations. And then when the movie is over and we have been thoroughly satisfied in our dream, we come out and say, oh, now I have to go back to office tomorrow. Or if we are a student, we say, oh, I have to appear for my examination tomorrow. And we go back to the real problems of our existence. And we may sit from TV, we come back home after a hard day. And what is happening in Bombay now? There is no social life worth speaking of. Why? Because as soon as people come home, the TV is switched on. No communication even between the family members. The children, right from the time they come home from school, TV is switched on. And then they're simply gazing at the TV screen all day long, forgetting the problems of life. So what are we doing? We are actually running away from the problems. And so many forms of entertainment are there just to take you away from the problems of life, just to tell you, don't worry, these problems may be there, but look, we have a solution for you. See, so many nice solutions. Why are you despairing? Don't you see? Just by coming here, you can be happy. And what is advertising? The whole advertising industry, we don't have anything against advertising per se. But the fact that advertising is used in this particular manner is noteworthy. So what is the advertising industry being used for? Simply to cover up the reality. The reality is that you are going to be miserable whatever you do. And you should try to find a spiritual solution. But the advertisers will say on behalf of the products which are being manufactured, don't worry, just use my product and you will be happy. Use this television and you will be happy. Use this thing and you will be happy. So what is going on? It is simply mass propaganda. Simply mass materialistic propaganda that is meant to overwhelm our intelligence. Overwhelm us, swamp us to such an extent that we lose our intelligence. We lose our perception of the reality of our suffering situation. And we also, like everybody else, get tempted to think, oh, there may be some hope for me after all. It looks so tempting. The razzle-dazzle of this five-star culture of today is so tempting. We may think, oh, these people seem to be happy. So there is a veneer of superficiality, a gloss that makes everybody appear smiling on the front, but actually from inside everyone is suffering. Everywhere, it is simply a hypocritical veneer. And it requires an X-ray vision of spiritual knowledge to be able to understand what is beneath that surface, to just see through the gross superficiality of this material existence. All these five-star hotels, the jet-set culture, Actually, the fact is, none of these things are ever going to make us happy. Like the fish out of water. Whatever you may do to that fish, you put it in a Rolls Royce car, give it some nice clothes, whatever you may do, unless you put it back in the water, it will never be happy. So the whole materialistic environment is a propaganda meant to simply convince you that don't think this is a world of suffering. This is a world of happiness. Come on, I am able to do it. You can also do it. So it is simply perpetuating this illusion, perpetuating a dream. Therefore, an intelligent person must wake up of this dream. We should not simply hang on to this false dream in false and vain hopes. And ultimately, by clinging on to this dream at the time of death, we realize, oh, I have wasted my life. In the Shastra, it is said that every single materialistic person repents like anything at the time of death. And he says, I have wasted my entire life. I never looked for God. I wasted my time running after the things of this world. I simply wasted my life when actually I should have been spending my time here. So therefore, the material energy, the material life means simply new and ingenious ways of covering up the reality. That is what material life is. And your skill will be tested to the extent you are ingenious enough in covering it up. The better you are able to cover it up, and for the longer you are able to maintain the facade, the more successful you are in material life. This is the fact. But factually, the situation is just the reverse. So we should tell the materialistic people that actually it is you who are running away from the reality. You are like the ostrich. Do you know what the ostrich does when it is faced with a predator, with a prey, the animal comes to eat it? What does the ostrich do? The ostrich simply puts his head in the ground. Because once he puts the head in the ground, he can't see the enemy. And then, what happens? He thinks, oh, my problem has gone away. But he's going to come. And he's going to eat him up. Just like a soldier on the battlefield, if he's fighting, and he thinks, if I just close my eyes, then it'll become okay. But no, the bullets are coming. So you have to find a solution. You have to fight. You have to stand there and fight. Or else, if there's somebody else, he may run away. But you have to do something. So this is the situation of our life. We are simply running away from the reality. And when you try to face the reality and solve it by the only legitimate bona fide means, people say that you are escapist. But actually, what are you escaping from? Yes, we want to escape from suffering. Do you not want to be happy in life? Is there anybody who says, I want to be happy in life, I want to be miserable in life? Everyone wants to be happy. Everyone is making an attempt to get away from happiness, but because no one knows what is happiness, so they are simply ending up actually extending their happiness more and more, perpetuating their misery more and more. And this is what misery is all about. So it requires some intelligence actually to even understand that we are suffering. Because the power of Maya is so strong that it bewilders our intelligence to think that we are not actually suffering. Therefore, in the Shastra it is said that a person who says that I'm happy, he is actually the most unfortunate person. Because he will never really try to make a real solution to his problems. And actually, any sensible person actually can see that this is a place of misery. It doesn't require so much intelligence. After all, what is misery? Can someone define what is misery? People say, you may be miserable, but I am not miserable, I am happy. So how would you counter this charge? Can anyone define? We have seen last two sessions we saw what is false happiness and what is real happiness. Now based upon that and upon what we have discussed so far, can somebody give me a very small, very precise definition of what is misery? Precisely, absolutely, very correct definition. Misery means something unwanted. Isn't it such a simple definition? Anything that is unwanted in your life is misery. The very fact that you don't want it means it is misery. Correct? So, I recently saw a cigarette advertisement for some company. And it says the man is standing there. And he is smoking the cigarette. And the slogan is, I get what I want. So just see, F this propaganda. the advertiser and the company is trying to encourage this smoker, you please smoke this brand and you will get whatever you want. But is that the reality? Yes, he's going to get many things he doesn't want, namely cancer, and he's going to get bronchitis, and he's going to get bad teeth, and so many things. So actually, material life means misery because it is full of conditions that you don't want. And also, there are so many things you want which you don't get. So any sensible person can understand that he's always subjected to unwanted conditions. And not only is he subject to these conditions, but these conditions are beyond his control. Birth is beyond our control. Death is beyond our control. Old age is beyond our control. And to a large extent, disease is beyond our control. And so many other sufferings that we are subjected to are also beyond our control. Your boss in the office comes and fires you. It's beyond your control. What can you do? So also we see so many kinds of miseries are being inflicted upon us, which I will discuss a little later. So misery means to get what you don't want and not get what you want, isn't it? You want all the pleasures of life, but you don't get them. And even if you get them, later on you get something else. Like you, this person who was smoking the cigarette, he thought he was getting some pleasure, but later on he ended up with so many problems. So those things he didn't want. So misery means to not get what you want and to get what you don't want. Is there any sane, sensible person in this world who can say that I get everything I want and I don't get everything I don't want? Is there anyone who can honestly say this? So who can honestly claim that he is happy in this world? It's not possible. And we can see that everyone is being subjected to misery. But still, avaran atmika shakti means that power of maya or illusion that covers our intelligence, covers our vision of the reality and makes us think that this world is a very wonderful place to be in. And because of this avaran atmika shakti, everything is going on in this world. And because of this, we are increasing our bondage. So instead of using our human rationality, our intelligence, for trying to find a solution, a permanent solution to our miseries, what are we doing? We are simply trying to enjoy more and more worldly pleasures, which are increasing our bondage, and therefore it increases our misery. So this material world, as we have seen earlier, is a place of bondage. Bondage means we are bound, bound like a prisoner. Therefore this material world in the Shastra is also compared to a prison, where we are all jailed. Somebody is in an A-class cell, somebody is in a B-class cell, somebody is in a C-class cell. But little difference. All are prisoners. All are suffering. And do you know who the superintendent of this jail is? Anyone? Yes, Durga Devi. Durga is the superintendent of the prison house of this material world. Do you know what weapon she carries in her hand? The trident or the trishul. The trishul has three prongs. And do you know what the three prongs stand for? Anyone? Yes? No? Not the three modes? No? Yes, correct. The three kinds of miseries that are inflicted by Maya upon us. The three kinds of miseries. And Durga is always poking us with them, all the time. That is her duty as a superintendent of the prison. And what are those three kinds of miseries? Adhyatmika klesha, adhibhautika klesha, and adhidaivika klesha. Adhyatmika klesha means those sufferings that are inflicted upon us by our own body and mind.
there is tension, there is agony, there is hunger, there is thirst. So many bodies are inflicted upon us through our own body and mind. So these are called adhyatmika klesha. Then there is adhibhautika klesha, which means misery is inflicted upon us by other living entities. Whether it is the person next to you in the train, whether it is a boss in your office, whether it is your husband or wife, or whether it is your child, whether it is a mosquito or the bed bug, or anyone, any living entity who is causing misery to you, this suffering is called the adhibhautika klesha. And finally, there is the adhidaivika klesha, which means the miseries that are inflicted by nature. What are they? Excessive heat, excessive cold, tornadoes, typhoons, volcanoes, earthquakes, tidal waves. So these are all miseries. And these threefold miseries, we are being constantly subjected to them. So any intelligent person has to always ask, why am I suffering? How many of us ask ourselves these questions in a very philosophical way? Why am I suffering? And why am I being forced to suffer? I don't want to suffer, but I'm being forced to suffer. This is real intelligence. Real intelligence begins when we try to seriously make a solution to the misery of our life. But first of all, at least we have to come to terms with the fact that we are miserable. But if we want to simply live in a world of illusion and say, I am happy, then how can we come to this platform? 500 years ago, Lord Krishna incarnated as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he had a very intimate disciple called Sanatana Goswami. This Sanatana Goswami, he was from the Saraswat Brahmin community in Karnataka actually, but he had emigrated to Bengal many generations ago. And he was a very important minister in the government of the Nawab of Bengal called Nawab Hussain Shah. This is about 500 years ago. And he was such a scholar, a great scholar, even materially. He was very young at that time. He was less than 30 years old. But because of his skill and his accomplishment and his learning, the Nawab Hussain Shah made him and his brother very high ministers in his government. And he was later to be known as Sanatana Goswami. But this Nawab Hussain Shah called him Sakar Khas, Sakar Malik. And Sakar Malik and his brother, Dabir Khas, who later on went to become a great saintly personage called Rupa Goswami. So they were both wanting to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they wanted to get away from their worldly responsibilities. So they were trying. And eventually one day they did manage to do it separately. And Sanatana Goswami, when he came across Lord Chaitanya, what did he do? It's very instructive for us to know how he behaved. When Sanatana Goswami saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately prostrated himself, flat, dandavat. Dandavat means like a danda or a rod. He just fell flat. He offered his obeisances and he said, my dear Lord, I am such a fallen person. I am associating with the most abominable people who have been committing all kinds of sinful activities. And because of their association, my consciousness has also been contaminated. And many, many people in this world around me, they are praising me that you are such a learned person. And I am such a fool that I actually believe them. And I think that I am a learned person. But factually, I know I am a great fool because I don't even know why I am suffering. So please inform me. And he put a straw between his teeth. Do you know what is the significance of putting a straw in the teeth? Anyone? Yes? A cow or a donkey. You see, donkey eats straw. So when you approach a very elevated saintly person, it is symbolic that when you put straw between your teeth, it is a gesture of humility. Where you're saying that I'm also like an ass. I'm like a donkey. If you approach spiritual knowledge or if you approach God or a very spiritual personality in a very proud position, then you cannot understand the truth. Because truth can be understood only when you take a humble position. But in this world, who wants to be humble? Very few people. So Sanatana Goswami is showing us the way. He was such a powerful person, a minister. He was very learned. He was learned in the Bhagavatam. He would give lectures in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was a scholar in Persian, Urdu, Arabic, Sanskrit. He had great influence all over the state. But yet, when he came to surrender to his spiritual master, he fell flat. He called himself a fool number one, not even fool number two. He put a straw between his teeth. And then he said, who am I? I don't know.
Please inform me who I am. And please tell me, O Lord, why am I being subjected to these threefold miseries? Trividha tapa. Tapa means miseries. So why am I being subjected to these threefold miseries even though I don't want them? Please instruct me. And what is my duty now that I have found you? So this is the beginning of real knowledge. Any intelligent person has to ask, why am I being subjected to these threefold miseries, the dukkhalayam? Why? And the person who can give us the solution to these problems is not any materialistic person, however powerful he may be, however scholarly he may be, however influential or charismatic he may be. The only person who can make a real solution to the misery of our life is the genuine, bona fide spiritual master. We have also seen this in an earlier session, where Lord Krishna says, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshinaha. That you have to approach a bona fide spiritual master, inquire how? Submissively. Inquire submissively from him, render service to him, and he will impart the truth to you because he has realized the truth. So this truth has to be assimilated. And when this truth is assimilated, we will be on the path to actually get a solution to our miseries. And what is the knowledge he will give us? He will give us this knowledge that is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paro api manute anartham tatkritam chaphipadyate. Which it is said that the fundamental cause of illusion or problems in this world is yaya sammohito jivaha. That the jivatma, the spirit soul, is covered over by sammoha, is bewildered by this maya influence. By what? He is actually para. Para means he is spiritual, he is transcendental. The spirit soul has nothing to do with this material body. But what does he think? Manute anartham. He thinks that I am a material product. He thinks I am matter. He thinks I am this temporary material body. And therefore, tat kritam chabhipadyate. Therefore, he has to undergo the reactions of various material miseries. In other words, the spiritual master will give us this fundamental knowledge. What is that? That the root cause of all suffering, of all problems in this world is that we think ourselves to be this material body when actually we are the spirit soul. We have nothing to do with this material body. But because of our wrong identification with it, we are caught up in so many suffering situations. So in this way, we should know that accepting a bona fide spiritual master is not a matter of fashion. It is not to be done for getting certain material benefits, as many people are wont to do in society. Accepting a bona fide spiritual master is a serious business. It is a business when you vow to dedicate yourself to follow the instructions of the guru, not just to have a show bottle guru whose picture you can keep on the shelf but whose instructions you don't follow. A spiritual master is empowered to actually relieve you of all suffering. So should we not at least try to follow his instructions? This is the beginning of knowledge. So therefore, this dukkhalayam, is this pain, is meant to remind us that actually you are not this body. You are actually Satchidananda. Why has Lord Krishna designed this material world to be a dukkhalayam? Can anyone say? People ask this question, does God like us to suffer? Why has he made this place to be a dukkhalayam? Why couldn't he have made everything so nice and happy everywhere? So that we are forced to remember him. Yes, very good. In other words, Lord Krishna is deliberately giving us these miseries because suffering is an impetus to realizing God. If everything was nice in this world, you would not find the need to believe in God. You would think, oh, I am so powerful. My intelligence, my strength, my abilities, my relatives, my particular power, my situation is sufficient. I am able to tackle my situation myself. I don't need anybody's help. My own abilities, etc., are sufficient to make me happy. But when we are forced to suffer beyond our control, then we become humble. When we are smashed repeatedly by the waves of Maya, at that time one becomes a little humble. Therefore one sees that one becomes mellow with age. We become more humble with age. As one grows older, One becomes humble because in young age one may be very in good health. One may be thinking, I can conquer the world. And then we become a little realistic as one grows old to see actually the situation is not so good, actually. Actually, there are so many forces acting on me which are beyond my control, and actually I'm just an insignificant puppet actually in the hands of material nature. Actually, I'm nothing. So we begin to realize with time. So therefore, Queen Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, she prays that, my Lord, please subject us to these sufferings again and again and again. She is praying to Lord Krishna, who is actually her nephew, playing the role of her nephew, but who is, as you know, the Supreme Lord. So she prays that, please keep us in this suffering situation, because when things are going well, we can't remember you. So put us in this suffering situation, and then I remember you again and again. And it is only by remembering you that we can cross over this ocean of birth and death successfully. This material world is compared to an ocean, and all the living entities in this ocean are being tossed about by the waves, sometimes this way, sometimes that way, and all are suffering. Sometimes we are sinking, and when we are sinking, we are terribly suffering, and sometimes there is a brief respite when we are floating. So in this way, sometimes sinking, sometimes floating, we are being tossed around. So what is the analogy? The analogy is that when we are suffering, we are actually able to see directly, perceive the suffering. For example, when you have intense pain, or when somebody humiliates you, at that time there is an immediate shock of the suffering situation, and you are able to realize this material world is suffering. But then after some time, the effect dies out, and then the avaranatmika shakti of maya comes and covers you over. After all, that suffering was only a short while. What does it matter? And then, because you are temporarily relieved for some time from the misery, you're floating now for some time, so you think, oh, everything is okay. After all, this is life, sometimes up, sometimes down. So everything is nice. So we forget because of Maya's avaranatmika shakti. So in this way, in the ocean of material existence, we are being tossed out again and again and again. So Queen Kunti says, my dear Lord, I don't want this floating up and down business. You simply keep me in suffering so I can think of you. And this vast, huge ocean can be crossed only when one is constantly remembering you. So that is the reason Lord Krishna is putting us in pain. And therefore, a devotee of the Lord, he or she doesn't think of pain as being something undesirable. Now this may sound surprising. Not that the devotee goes out of his way to welcome pain and do something foolish, but the devotee says, he prays to the Lord, Tatte nukampam susamikshamano bhunjane vatma kritam vipakam. The poor devotee prays that, my Lord, I understand that this pain or this suffering, this humiliation, whatever it is that you are subjecting me to, is your will. It is your mercy. Anukampa, tatte anukampam. So it is your anukampa or your mercy, and therefore I accept it as such, because it is only by your mercy that I can cross over this ocean of material existence. So I have no material benedictions to ask from you. I only want to ask you one benediction, that please help me to remember you again and again. So all the great devotees like Queen Kunti, they are showing us the way, showing us the path. Mahajano yena gatah sapantha. So we should learn from the example of such great and saintly souls. So therefore, we should not be misled by the propaganda of this world. Whenever there is some false respite, we should not think that we are happy. So Lord Krishna is giving us this misery just to remind us. Again, a very simple analogy will help us to understand this situation. Why is there pain in the body? Why is there a suffering situation? Why is there a burning sensation when you put your hand in the fire? Or if you are in the kitchen and you touch something very hot, immediately your finger gets singed and you recoil. Why? Just imagine, suppose you were standing and your thumb or your finger by mistake went into the fire. If there was no burning sensation, then what would happen? Your finger would get consumed, and therefore you would not even notice it, and you would not be able to use the thumb for the rest of your life. But because even on the slightest burning sensation being perceived in your brain, immediately there is an SOS signal. What happens? You immediately withdraw your hand. Why? Because the brain sends you a signal. Something is wrong somewhere. SOS. Get away from there. So immediately, at a reflex action, your hand is pulled away. So similarly, the pain in this world is given to us by Lord Krishna because it is there to remind us, look, you are spirit soul. You are the Jivatma. This pain is here to remind you that this is not your lot. You are not meant to receive this pain. You are Sat-Chit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. It is not your position to be suffering. It is not your place. Get away from here. Material world is not a place for us. In fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, my param guru, he made a very nice statement. He said this material world is no place for a gentleman. It's a fact. It is no word for a place for a gentleman. Everyone is being subjected to so many humiliating situations, time and time and time again. But still we are so stubborn that we refuse to accept that this world is a place of misery. And regarding how stubborn we can get, Srila Prabhupada, our Param Guru, he gave a very nice story. Once upon a time, there were two men who were fighting with each other about which is better, a knife or a scissor. So one was saying the knife is better. The other was saying, no, the scissor is better. So finally, the argument got to such a point of where there was more heat than light, as usually happens, that the man who was advocating the cause of the knife, he picked up the other man who was advocating the cause of the knife, of the scissors, and he threw him into the river. And the other man didn't know how to swim, so he was drowning. But as he was drowning, he was still stubbornly sticking to his point of view. And even as he was drowning, the rest of his body was drowned, and only his hand was up. And even as he was drowning, he was doing this to indicate that, no, I'm still right. It is a scissor that is the superior. So in other words, we are subjected time and time and time again to so many humiliating and fearful and distressful situations, but we still want to say, no, I am happy in this world and I can be happy in this world. So Lord Krishna very mercifully even further subjects that person to suffering, that one day the person will wake up to the reality that you cannot be happy in this world. It is a dukkhalayam, it is a guarantee. So many products are being manufactured by companies with a guarantee, 1 year guarantee. It will not get spoiled for 1 year. But you can't rely on those guarantees because sometimes they fail. Within 6 months, the instrument may get spoiled. But when Lord Krishna gives a guarantee, it never fails. And Lord Krishna is not giving us a 1 year guarantee. He is giving us an eternal guarantee that so long as you are in this material world, know for certain that this is going to be dukkhalayam. It is designed for misery. So whatever adjustments you may make, this way, that way, you can't change it. It is pre-programmed for misery. So why unnecessarily struggle? Struggle in vain. Might as well use our energies for a spiritual purpose which can actually uplift us, enlighten us, and bring us to the point of real understanding wherein we can make the real solution to life. This is what is required. And such people who take to this process are called Mahatmanaha, Mahatmas. Mahatma is not a title to be rubber stamped. Mahatma means a person who has actually taken to this process of spiritual life, who has taken the shelter of God, leaving aside all other shelters. Now in this world, people are trying to find solace from their misery by taking shelter of so many other realities, or so many other falsehoods actually, I beg your pardon. Like somebody takes shelter of alcohol, somebody takes shelter of this and that. So Mahatma is one who has taken shelter only, exclusively of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the definition of a Mahatma is given by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakriti mashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. Lord Krishna says the Mahatma is one who has taken complete shelter of the daivim prakritim, that means of the divine nature. He has surrendered completely and utterly to the Lord and given up everything else, given up all refuge of his materialistic intelligence, of his own powers, of his own abilities. And therefore, what does he do? Bhajantya ananya manaso. With ananya manaso, that means with one-pointed attention, he worships the Supreme Lord. He performs bhakti. This is what is important. This is what is required for us. And then we can attain the samsiddhim paramam gataah. This subject I will try to deal with more in detail, probably two Wednesdays later. But suffice it to say at this junction, that in this material world, so long as you are here and suffering the cycle of birth and death, there is no hope for happiness. But the hope for happiness is to attain the perfection, samsiddhim. And what is that samsiddhim? Paramam gata. Paramam means that supreme abode of the Lord. There is a spiritual world. There is something called the kingdom of God, where there is no more birth, no more death, no more old age, no more disease. And that is the destination we are all headed for. Or at least, that is the destination we should be headed for. That is the ultimate goal of our life. That is the place called Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha. Kuntha means misery. Vai means free from. So Vaikuntha, or the abode of God, means that place where there is no misery. It is not Dukhalayam. It is simply Sukhalayam. But not the Sukha of this world. It is actually Anandalayam. Because it is full of Ananda, bliss. And last time we defined what is Ananda. So that should be the ultimate goal of our life. We should not be misled by the false propaganda of this world that makes us think that this world is the place where we can be happy. So let us end this note on this realistic point of this note, that this world is a place of misery. Whatever you may do from a materialistic viewpoint, it cannot make you happy. So let us rather take refuge of the spiritual process and make our life perfect. And the easiest way in this Kali Yuga to make our life perfect is to chant the holy name. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti Eva Nasti, Nasti Eva Gatiranyatha. In this Kali Yuga, there is no other way, no other way, no other way except chanting the name of Hari, the name of Hari, the name of Hari. So we are not left with a choice that you can do this also and that also. Kevalam, only the name of Lord Hari. And the Kali Santaran Upanishad also specifically, it prescribes for us a particular Maha Mantra, which is very effective for crossing over the ocean of birth and death in this age of Kali Yuga. And that Maha Mantra is, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So let us always chant this Maha Mantra and make our life perfect. So we will end here. I'm afraid I have overstepped my time today. And we will, during the darshan, we will have some nice bhajans. And after the darshan is over at 9 o'clock, we will have 5 or 10 minutes for question answers. So now we will get ready for darshan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Shirade Gopal Bhaj Man Shirade, Shirade Gopal Bhaj Man Shirade, 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 Gopal Bhaj Man Shirade, 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 Shirade,